From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. This video has been viewed almost 7 million times on Facebook. It's the band One Republic performing live at a private party in Orlando last year. On a screen behind the band flashes a series of videos highlighting the heroism of police officers, administering CPR, arresting bad guys, rescuing a drowning dog, and all ending with the message, God bless Blue. A coroner from suburban Chicago recorded the band with his cell phone. He was one of about 2,500 law enforcement officials in the audience. They were in town for a conference. This party was a hot ticket, and it was free.
All right, our program is going to begin in just a few more minutes. Please grab a drink from the bar.
When Rick Smith takes the stage, he gets a rock star reception, too.
This is so cool being up here. I'm going to take a selfie so I can share it with you guys.
Smith is the CEO of a company called Axon. He threw the party to celebrate its 25th anniversary. Axon makes body cameras, drones, virtual reality simulators, but it's best known for tasers. Almost every law enforcement agency in the country uses them. Cops seem to love them because their electrical pulses have the power to stop dangerous people in their tracks. But the problem is, tasers don't always do that. The police in this audience probably know that, so Smith levels with them.
And we know as our technology has gotten better, you've come to rely on it more and more. And it's really painful for you and for us when it doesn't work, when it doesn't get the job done. And that's what keeps us up at night. And for the last 5 or 6 years, we've had a team of people working really hard because we know we need to do better.
That's what he said in 2018. But just 3 years earlier, he was bragging about how well tasers worked.
80 to 95% effective in the field.
And Axon has claimed that during testing, its tasers were effective 99, even 100% of the time. But police have found that in the field, they don't work nearly that well. It's not that tasers are malfunctioning, that hardly ever happens, but they often fail to subdue suspects. In some police departments, officers say that happens almost half the time. APM reports a team of investigative journalists at American Public Media spent the last year looking at what happens when tasers fail. Their correspondent, Curtis Gilbert, begins by taking us to Burlington, Vermont. And before we get started, we should warn you that this story may be disturbing for some listeners.
When Lynn Martin moved to Burlington in 2014, her income was low enough she qualified for public housing. She was lucky to find an apartment right downtown. It was in a four-story brick building built at the turn of the century. It was once a candy factory. The South Square apartments catered to senior citizens and people with disabilities. But Lynn soon discovered she was in the minority there. She was one of the few people on her floor, not dealing with major mental health problems.
Five of the people had very significant issues, and there were two of us who didn't.
Did you know it was going to be like that when you moved in, or did it kind of come as a surprise?
Well, I was a little startled to find it was quite that high a density in the population. And by the way, I had no problems with anybody other than Phil. I just want to be very clear about that.
Phil Grennan lived right across the hall from Lynn. And he suffered from a host of mental health problems, including paranoia and a disorder related to schizophrenia.
You know, he would talk to the walls, and he started at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon and would quiet finally maybe at 11 o'clock at night, and then it would start up again at like 5 o'clock in the morning. It would be like, oh, you people, no, I'm not going to do that. Stop bothering me. Stop talking to me. I mean, he just talked to the walls.
In the winter of 2015, Phil's condition started to get worse. Just about everyone noticed it. His daughter, his psychiatrist, and perhaps most of all, the other people in his building. One day, Lynn was sitting in her apartment when she heard Phil out in the hallway. And this time, it wasn't the walls he was yelling at. It was one of his neighbors. And this next exchange has some pretty offensive language.
He was getting onto the elevator, she got off, and he just let fly on her. I'll kind of use the language. You can edit it out if you want, but you bitch, you're a retard, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, he just really let her have it. And this poor woman, you know, had issues of her own. She was just devastated and shaking and very upset.
Lynn reported the incident to the police, and the Burlington Housing Authority, which responded by tucking an eviction notice into his doorframe. Phil was 76 years old. He'd lived in the subsidized apartment complex for 18 years. His medical records show his paranoia often focused on fears of eviction. It was March 2016, barely springtime. The overnight temperatures in Vermont still dip below freezing most nights. Less than a week after he got the eviction notice, Phil was sitting alone in his apartment, yelling at the walls again. But this time, Lynn says, he was making threats.
And I heard him say, I'm going to get them. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to get, and he was naming people. I'm going to cut him up. I'm going to gut his stomach. I mean, he was coming out with really very, very alarming stuff. And I said, that's it.
In addition to being Phil's neighbor, Lynn is a licensed mental health counselor. So she called the treatment center where Phil was a patient. Lynn knew they would notify the police.
And it did cross my mind that I was calling for somebody who was, you know, pretty out of the box and threatening people, and the police would come with guns. And my awareness was that Phil could end up dead that day. I was fully aware of that, that he was the type of person who could end up being shot by the police.
Hey, Phil, it's Officer Ellman, Burlington Police.
Two officers show up at Phil's door, body cameras rolling. They knock a few more times with no response. So they get the key and open his door.
Drop the knife.
Drop it.
He's standing there with a knife in each hand.
Call for backup. 344, you got a knife. Get us some other.
One officer draws a gun.
Drop the knife.
The other.
Get your taser out.
Draws a taser.
Phil, drop it and talk to us.
After nearly 2 minutes of this, Phil finally speaks.
I'm a lawyer.
Okay.
I'm a psychiatrist.
Well, tell me more about that. But put down the knife.
I just did, you stupid son of a bitch.
Put down the knife.
Leave me alone.
Put down the knife.
Leave me alone.
Phil isn't a doctor or a lawyer. He'd thought about law school and even took the LSAT after graduating from the University of Vermont, but he ended up getting a master's in education instead. Phil taught at the community college level before his mental illness made holding a job impossible, and he was a stay-at-home dad after that. It's clear he's in the midst of a delusion. Phil steps forward to close the door, and one of the officers fires a taser.
No.
In order for a taser to work, a lot has to go right. The weapons fire a pair of barbed darts attached to thin wires. Both darts need to strike their target in order for electricity to flow between them. If even one dart misses, nothing happens. Thick or loose-fitting clothing can get in the way of making a complete circuit too, let alone a slamming door. That's what seemed to knock one of the darts off course. And it wouldn't be the last time the Burlington Police Department tried to use a taser that night.
I was down at the shooting range at the Vermont Police Academy in Pittsburgh when I got a call that we had an emotionally disturbed person barricaded in an apartment on College Street.
Brandon Del Pozo was just 7 months into his job as Burlington's chief of police. He was 41 at the time, Ivy League educated and media savvy. Del Pozo took the job after spending 18 years at the New York Police Department. He'd commanded two precincts there and seen his share of police shootings. He could tell the situation with Phil had the potential to turn deadly. So he jumps in his police cruiser and drives 60 miles north to try to save Phil's life.
I was happy to see when I got there that the scene was under control, that they'd roped the door shut, and they were taking their time, and they were trying to get him to talk so they could negotiate.
This isn't one of those stories where the police rush in and the situation spirals out of control in a matter of seconds. Far from it. Phil is alone in his apartment. The rope tied around the doorknob means it's impossible for Phil to burst into the hallway and provoke the cops into shooting him. He can't hurt anyone, except possibly himself. The police have time on their side, so they wait. They knock on his door.
Hey, Phil. It's Mike. I haven't gone anywhere. We know that you got a notice and or been told that you've been evicted. We have resources that can help you, but I can't help you unless you talk to me.
They call his phone more than a dozen times.
Hey, Phil, it's Mike. Just give me a call back so we can talk about what's going on, all right?
Phil never answers, never says a word. They don't know if he's still alive in there. Chief Del Pozo wants to see what's going on inside the apartment, but he doesn't want his officers to go in blind.
I asked if we had a drill. The police department didn't own a drill. I went home and got a drill. I got a drywall saw. I got the right bits, and we cut a few holes in his apartment wall to put a camera in to see what we could see.
So I can see his kitchen, that's his table and everything. Yeah, I don't see him.
And what we saw was nothing. We just saw empty rooms.
So almost 4 hours after Phil retreats into his apartment,
slow and steady, guys.
Del Pozo decides it's time to go in.
Burlington police, come out!
They find Phil standing in the shower, hiding behind the curtain. He still has the knives.
He got a knife in his hand.
He still says nothing. He just stands there.
Step back a little bit.
The cops use a device called a pepper ball to try to smoke Phil out of the bathroom. It doesn't work on him. It just throws the 8 officers in the apartment into fits of coughing.
Hey, we're going to avoid the pepper ball from now on.
Avoid the pepper ball?
Yeah. Note to self, never use pepper ball again inside of a closed quarters.
It's time to make a new plan.
My sergeant says, listen, you could definitely get up on him, and we have enough staffing here. We have enough equipment. If we could stun him with a taser, we should be able to get in there and to take him into custody.
Is he going
to
tense up or drop the knife?
A little bit of both, I guess.
Del Pozo is so confident in the plan, he authorizes his deputy chief, Jan Wright, to hold a press conference on the street below.
This housing development right here is made up of a bunch of different people.
Meanwhile, up in the apartment, the cops line up at the bathroom door.
All right, let's move forward, guys.
Officer Derwin Ellerman stands at the front of the line. In one hand, he holds a shield. In the other, he later tells investigators, is a taser.
So I had my taser out, at the ready, off safe. Sergeant Tree pushed the... Pushed the curtain open.
Again, Phil says nothing. He stands there clutching his knives and turns his body toward the officers. At this point, Chief Del Pozo says, everything is still under control.
The plan stops working the moment they fire the taser.
I fired the first cartridge. I think he got a good lockup because I saw him seize up and shaking a little bit, but he didn't drop the knives. And he's screaming the whole time. And, not sure which hand he used, but he reached down and he pulled the barbs out of himself.
As soon as Phil removes one of the barbed darts, he breaks the circuit and electricity stops flowing through his body. Axon executives have portrayed yanking out the darts as unlikely. Here's CEO Rick Smith on cable TV in 2002.
It's like take a computer network. Imagine putting that spike of electricity into it.
Right.
It's going to send everything haywire. We do the same thing inside the human body, so the brain can't tell the arms, legs, and muscles what to do. And if you can't move, you can't attack anyone.
What's to stop a perpetrator from breaking those wires off?
The 50,000 volts that's going through his body.
Rick Smith's brother and co-founder, Tom Smith, said something similar when ABC's Bill Weir asked him about it in 2011.
Have you ever seen a test subject able to yank these out?
No.
They can't control their motor
functions. You can't control motor function, right.
But Axon's more recent training materials seem to contradict the Smith brothers' past claims. A 2016 PowerPoint presentation created by the company notes people can retain control of their arms and legs, even while receiving a taser shock. Chief Del Pozo says that was clearly the case with Phil Grennan.
The tasers hurt him enough to make him really angry and to aggravate his episode, and yet did not hurt him enough to incapacitate him.
What happens next unfolds in less than 10 seconds. It takes Officer Ellerman longer than that just to describe it to investigators.
He immediately steps out of the tub and his arms are gone, the knives are flaming. I don't remember if I said back up. I know someone said get back, get back, get back. He's moving fast. We did not expect him to move that fast.
Out on the street, the deputy chief is still talking to reporters. She's in mid-sentence when the gunshots ring out. The cameras pan up to the open window on the second floor. They can't see it, but Phil is on the floor, dying. Bullet holes in his chest, thigh, groin, and abdomen. He also has 6 smaller marks on his body, the kind tasers leave behind. Chief Del Pozo says another one of his officers fired one just a moment before the gunshots.
By the time we were done with this encounter, unfortunately, the room was just a crisscross mess of taser wires.
Phil's story is like hundreds of others all over the country. Police end up shooting someone after their tasers prove ineffective. APM reports found more than 250 cases that follow this same plot line over just a three-year period. Tasers failed to resolve the situation, and then police resorted to firearms. And in more than 100 of those cases, people became more aggressive after an officer fired a taser at them. Had the tasers been effective, many of those people might still be alive. In some cases, it's obvious why the taser didn't work, because one or both of the electrified darts missed their target. But with many of the shootings, it's much murkier. The darts hit, they just don't do much. And the investigators don't spend much time trying to figure out why. They tend to focus on the bullets that proved fatal, not the tasers that proved ineffective. That was the case with Phil Grennan's death, too. It's a question that gnawed on Phil's niece, Sarah Grennan.
It was eating me alive for a while.
A little less than 2 months after Phil died, the Burlington Police Department released videos from the cameras officers wore on their uniforms. But it wasn't until the next year that Sarah could bring herself to look at them.
I watched it on the anniversary of his death.
Why did you decide to do that?
I don't even know what the answer is. I don't even know why I watched it. I guess just to maybe try to figure out why it went so wrong.
And that's when she saw how close Phil was when Officer Ellerman used his taser.
They were face to face.
Ellerman was in the bathroom doorway. Phil was in the shower. Sarah started researching tasers, and she discovered it's not enough just for both darts to hit. It also matters how far away the target is. Tasers don't have the same effect on the human body when they're used at too close a range. They still hurt, and sometimes that's enough, but they won't always knock you over. That's because the two taser darts spread apart as they fly. The farther apart they hit, the more effective they become.
And I think that I had heard that the tasers they were using at the time, you have to be 9 feet away.
She's right. And the problem is, it's hard for officers to get that kind of distance in a small apartment or even in a scuffle out on the street. The manufacturer, Axon, acknowledges tasers are typically used at close range. And when you look at databases from major police departments that track this stuff, you can see just how close. In New York and Fort Worth, Texas, for example, officers report they usually fire their tasers at distances of 7 feet or less. They only use them at longer ranges about a quarter of the time. In other words, most of the time, cops don't use tasers at the ranges where they become reliably effective. So how far away was Phil? To find that out, I needed to get into his building and look at one of the apartments.
Are you Cynthia?
Yeah.
Hi, Curtis Gilbert.
Hi, Curtis. Call me Cindy.
Cindy. Okay, I will.
Come on in.
Thank you so much.
Cindy Cullum has lived in this tiny one-bedroom apartment for 18 years.
Where should we sit down to visit?
You sit in Phil's chair.
She was probably Phil's best friend.
I mean, he'd come down and sit in that chair, and we'd talk, and we had Thanksgiving together every year, and we only had stuffing dressing because that's all we each liked. He was so appreciative, so thankful for it. He was so dear. He was just, I can't say enough about him.
I could tell that Phil's death had really affected Cindy, but I wasn't prepared for what she said next.
It was so terrible that I tried to commit suicide 4 days afterwards, and they told me I was in the hospital for 3 weeks, and I'd never done that before or since. Never.
Do you remember making a decision to commit suicide?
Oh, absolutely. I wrote everything out for my cousin. And for some reason, the loss of Phil and what he went through before his death was so traumatic for me that I couldn't bear up to it.
Had you been inside Phil's apartment before?
Many times.
Is it laid out similar to this, or is it...
No, it isn't. The person who is in his apartment right now is named Steve, and he just moved in there a few months ago. he would let you in a minute.
Could you take me up there? And
oh, sure.
Should we go see?
Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Steve Wachlawick is 66 and lives with a little dog named Thor.
This is Thor.
He has no problem showing me his bathroom. He points to a mark on the shower tile he thinks might have been caused by a bullet.
This is the interesting thing.
Then he lets me take some measurements with my phone under the watchful eye of Thor. The place is tiny. The whole apartment measures less than 500 square feet. The bathroom is a bit shy of 4 feet by 7 feet.
All right, so according to this app on my phone, Phil might have been only 3, maybe 4 feet away from the officer when he tased him and could not have been more than, say, 6 feet or so away. So I think that could have been a big factor in why the taser didn't work on Phil.
We asked Axon to talk to us. They initially agreed, but then canceled the interview. The company didn't respond to our questions about the connection between tasers and fatal shootings by police. They sent us a statement saying research shows tasers are, quote, the most safe and effective, less lethal use of force tool available to law enforcement. After the break, Axon faces lawsuits from police officers.
All she knew is her taser didn't work. And didn't know why, and frankly, we didn't know why. And then lo and behold, you know, here it was right in front of us. It didn't work because it was designed to be underpowered.
That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.